welcome back to Truth Hurts Radio, where about 25% of my guests just don't show up. they found another number for Eustace at the studio, so during the next break, they're going to try to get him back on. But if not, I'll see if I can get him again next week, guys. It's just, I wonder what the percentage is with my show as compared to other talk shows that don't get guests lately. I think I'm setting new records here. Somebody get the number for Guinness. We'll have to give him a call. I think we get another world record going. This is crazy. He's not a low-profile guest either. I mean, Eustace. Anyway, hopefully we can get this thing resolved. Maybe during the break we might actually get a hold of him. In the meantime, I was going to start a new... go off onto a tangent with a new topic, but first of all, I'm already one quarter of the way through the show, so I don't want to necessarily go into something new. Second of all, I never did finish going over the protocols on Friday, and there's so many important points in these excerpts that I've hand-selected. I've picked out, you know, the best excerpts from the protocols, and so I thought I would just finish that. I kind of rushed it at the end there on Friday and left a lot of stuff unread. But I think I'll finish that today. Because this is so important, guys. It really does lay out the whole plan for the New World Order. They have followed this thing to a T. All right, so let me go into this. I'm just trying to find where I left off here on Friday. Okay, I think, well, we'll start here. I think this is where I left off. I'm just going to read, you know, excerpts like I was doing on Friday, and then I'll make some comments. But, you know, in reality, these statements don't even need comments. I mean, you just read this, and it's very clear that this stuff is actually what's going on all around us right now. Keep in mind, when these protocols were written, these blueprints for the New World Order, virtually none of the things mentioned herein were in place yet. But since 1905, when these things first surfaced publicly, everything has been, you know, systematically implemented. And if it's not already in place, it's on the horizon. All right, let me begin here. Methods of organization like these, imperceptible to the public eye, but absolutely sure, talking about, you know, rigging the economy, rigging the electoral system, so on, they are the best calculated to succeed in bringing the attention and the confidence of the public to the side of our government. Thanks to such methods, we shall be in a position, as from time to time may be required, to excite or to tranquilize the public mind on political questions, to persuade or to confuse, printing now truth, now lies, facts, or their contradictions, according as they may be well or ill received, always very cautiously feeling our ground before stepping upon it. We shall have a sure triumph over our opponents, since they will not have at their disposition organs of the press in which they can give full and final expression to their views. Owing to the aforesaid methods of dealing with the press. They're talking here, guys, about their control over public information through the press, the media. We shall not even need to refute them except very superficially. Okay, guys, I guess, wow, we got a call already. We got John in Oregon. Welcome to the show, John.
Have me on your show.
Yeah, what's going on, man?
Hey, I just wanted to let you know I got some news this morning that I thought you would find interesting possibly on the show. I did check and verify the links. The news source is, I'll post after what I state here. It's, six people who were involved with loading the nuclear missiles onto the B-52 bomb that we all heard about last week.
Right.
Six people involved in that apparently seem to have died mysteriously within the last week.
Well, there must have been more since I heard, because I only heard about two the other day, a husband and his wife, supposedly in a car crash. Now it's six.
Apparently there's six, and then there's several news links here. www.kxmc.com is one of the news link sources. Another one is www.kfyrtv.com. I just thought that would be interesting.
My. Yeah, you know, this reminds me of some servicemen had returned to, I think it was it Fort Bragg? Anyway, about a year after the Afghan War, almost a year, it was in August of 2002, they had come back, I think it was in June, from service, and they said that they had Bin Laden cornered in a cave. They radioed in and were told not to do anything, wait until help arrives. Shortly after, they said helicopters came in. They escorted Bin Laden out of the cave into the helicopters and flew off, and that was to be the end of it. They were told to keep their mouths shut. They opened their mouths, and bang, they all wound up dead, about half a dozen of them. Short break. If you want, John, hold over. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Hey guys, welcome back to Truth Hurts Radio. It's your host, Charlie Giuliani. John in Oregon, did you have, I thought you said you had a couple of things, or was that it? You still there, John? Okay, I guess John hung up. But anyway, yeah, thanks, John. Call in anytime. Very interesting stuff, guys. It turns out that Ama Jina Binadatta Fradadatta Stata. I can't pronounce that guy's name. I never can get that name right. Ahmadinejad. Ask me 5 minutes from now, and I won't be able to do it again. But anyways, he's coming to New York, apparently. Very interesting. I wonder if that missing missile that they killed six people over to keep him quiet is going to show up outside his hotel room. Or if they're just going to play and assassinate the guy? I don't know. No, they don't want to assassinate him yet. They need to use him as an excuse to have the war. Then they'll assassinate him and put the little puppet dictator in. Yeah, that's right. That's how it works. Anyway, guys, I guess we do have our guest on. Well, what do you know? I'll finish with the protocols some other time when the guest doesn't show up. Or when we can't reach a guest. Anyway, we do have Eustace Mullins, I believe. Mr. Mullins, you there?
Oh, hello. Yeah, I'm here to tell you about the Federal Reserve System and the Federal Reserve War Party, which is financing all the world wars with their money.
Yes, indeed. In fact, they needed to get the Federal Reserve in place, didn't they, before they got their war, or else they couldn't get us involved. There would be no means of paying back the huge loans that the war would generate.
Well, the principal function of a central bank is to finance wars. That's why you have a central bank like the Federal Reserve System.
Yeah, that's right. If you look back in the 19th century, a lot of people, you know, don't realize this because you don't get this historical perspective in the so-called
Well, the reason
history.
They started the central bank was that in 1885, the Rothschilds were ready for a war, but nobody had any money. So they had to set up a central bank.
Right. But it is interesting, you look at the history of central banking in Europe all during the 19th century, and those suckers were popping up all over the place.
Oh, yes. They realized that it's a must-have. You couldn't do anything without it.
It was like a popcorn fest. Just boom, 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 boom.
There was. And, you know, everybody got into the act. Everybody has a central bank. And the United States was the last one to have one, but that is the most successful at all.
Yeah. Yeah, they couldn't wait to get their fingers on this pie. They tried, several times. And on two occasions, they succeeded. 1791 was the first one, of course, and then 1816, they had their Bank of the United States. It wasn't a full-fledged central bank, but it was their attempt, at, you know, their first attempt at doing so. And it was hoped that eventually it would. But it didn't work. And then, of course, they knocked several presidents off, didn't they, who stood up to resist them.
Well, you know, fact, after England set up the Bank of England, they have never had a civil war in that country since then. Before that, they had wars all the time. And once they had a central bank, there was such control of the money that nobody could afford to fight anybody.
Yeah, there'd be no loans to fund such a thing anyway. And, of course, our civil war came about when we, you know, as a means to try to help facilitate that, to bring about a central bank. Lincoln, of course, refused, and so bullet in the head.
Oh, yes. He earned their enmity because he gave them greenback money.
Yeah, yeah. Which is what Kennedy did, of course, too.
Oh, yes. Well, that is what Ezra Pound called non-interest-bearing currency. And non-interest-bearing currency, the bankers don't make any money off of it.
Right, right. It's such a scam, you know, to think that we need this middleman. For what? For what purpose do we need this middleman? All they do is parasite off of us and make exorbitant money.
It's a racket.
It is. It's a complete racket. So, again, you know, who's calling the shots here? Is it the politicians are the ones who fatten their pockets? As always, follow the money.
Yeah, when I met the poet Ezra Pound in the St. Elizabeth Hospital in Washington when I went to visit him, the first thing he asked me if I could go to the Library of Congress, which he couldn't go there, of course, and see what I could find out about the Federal Reserve. Well, I found out everything. Who put it together and what their interests were and how it worked out so well.
So, Eustace, tell us a little about yourself, your background. I guess you were kind of a big wheel there in Washington years ago, huh?
Well, I didn't really know anything was going on until I went to the insane asylum and met Ezra Pound. And Ezra, of course, was a political prisoner, sentenced to life prison without ever having been tried because they had no evidence against him.
Who was this, did you say? Who was in prison?
Ezra Pound.
Oh, right, right. Okay.
He was a poet. But he was a poet who became interested in banking.
So it was through interviewing him that you were woken up?
Oh, yes.
Wow.
Well, I found everything at the Library of Congress, and I really had a field day.
Now, we were talking last week, and you were telling me that you were instrumental in waking up McCarthy, Joseph McCarthy.
Oh, I told McCarthy the simple truth was that all political movements had bankers behind them, and capitalism was the best banker of all. They had Jacob Schiff and Paul Warburg and the Rothschilds, and everybody had a great time.
But it was, you know, because of your influence on him, opening his eyes to this, that that he started his investigation of, you know, people within our own government that were involved in the Communist Party. That was interesting. I never had realized that.
Yeah, it's something that people don't think about usually.
Now, was he aware of the Council on Foreign Relations? I mean, that's the real communist infiltration right there. Did he know about this gang of thieves and hucksters?
Well, I think there's a growing awareness because millions of copies of my books have been distributed in the last 50 years. So somebody must know something about it.
So when did you first write The World Order? When did that originate?
That was the sequel to the Federal Reserve book. Because
oh, okay.
I got so much information about the corporate structure behind the war party that I put it all together and made another book.
So when did that one come out then, The Secrets of the Federal Reserve?
3 years after the Federal Reserve book, 1956.
Oh, is it that old? I didn't know it went back that far.
Oh, yeah, I've been around for a long time.
Wow. So, you know, people usually refer to G. Edward Griffin's book, you know, The Creature from Jekyll Island.
People used to ask me at my lectures what I thought of J. Edward Griffin's book. I said, I can tell you that it's impeccably researched because he took all my research and made his own book. He didn't make his own book. He just copied my book.
Right. But, you know, people refer to that as the classic work on the Federal Reserve, but yours actually goes back way before that. I didn't know it went back that far. Wow.
Oh, yes. And Griffin was financed by the John Birch Society to keep me from making any money out of my book.
How do you like that? I never knew that. So, you know, how
do people... Well, the John Birch Society, you know, was financed by Nelson Rockefeller.
Yeah, I've heard that. That's very interesting.
Chase Manhattan by a bank operation. And so they decided to finance their plagiarization of my Federal Reserve book in order to injure me. So they sold 50,000 copies, which, of course, I didn't get a penny out of, but Griffin did very well from it.
Hmm. And you know, guys, this shows the schizophrenia of this whole program. The Rockefellers are the ones who were probably most instrumental in creating the United Nations, and yet here they are funding the John Birch Society, which is supposed to be the enemy of the United
Party,
Nations.
First of all, then they created the United Nations, and they've been creating things ever since.
Right, right. But I'm making the point that, you know, they're the creators of the UN, and yet they're also funding these groups that are supposed to be opposed to the UN. They're funding both sides of the argument so they can control both sides. It's just a twisted mind manipulation game that's going on. It's crazy.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, your book was probably the first major work on exposing the Federal Reserve, was it not? Were there any before that?
Oh,
really?
It was the only one. There was no, I had no competition at all. And now everybody's getting into the act.
Right. I mean,
so
there were people
I did do all the research. I went through 2,500 books to get at the Library of Congress to get the material for the Federal Reserve book.
Wow.
So nobody else has ever had to do that since I did the work.
Yeah, this history was essentially unknown. There were some individuals who knew, who spoke out, like McFadden, who got killed, of course. They poisoned him at a banquet. Food poisoning.
Well, there was no Federal Reserve book section at the Library of Congress. I had to dig all the books out from other books.
Right. You had to go through mounds and mounds of material, I bet, to find all that. Yeah. Well, they don't want you to know. Most people don't even know what the Federal Reserve is, never even heard of it. And if they have heard of it, they think it's a federal institution run by the federal government.
Well, it made Ezra Pound very happy because it vindicated everything he ever said, and that's why he was locked up in the insane asylum. But they didn't dare try him because they had no evidence.
So whatever became of him?
People from Italy to testify against him. And the FBI spent millions of dollars to try to make a case against Ezra Pound, but there was no case because Ezra was living in Italy. It simply is a matter of accident or preference. But he had no connection with the Italian government whatsoever.
Unbelievable. Yeah, guys, this is how it works. You question authority, and if you're in enough of a position that they feel you're a threat, they'll get the psychiatric machinery going down on you, and there's almost no coming out of that. Once you've been declared, quote, insane, then the head doctors come along, get you on the medication, and they'll make you insane.
They'll give you something. It's sort of like another friend of mine who was in St. Elizabeth said, if you're not crazy when they bring you in, you'll be crazy the next day.
Yeah, seriously. Whatever became of Ezra Pound anyway? Did he just rot away there, or did they finally release him?
Well, he was just one of the patients, and they didn't get me in trouble. They used to, when we were talking, the patients would gather around and make faces and so forth, and Ezra would chase them away.
Wow.
But they never had any confrontation.
But, I mean, they kept him there? Was he there till he died?
They kept him there 15 years.
15 years.
I took another friend to visit him named Rex Lampman, an old newspaper man. He knew everybody in Washington. So he told Ezra, he said, you don't belong in here. And Ezra Pound said, well, yes, I know that. And Rex says, oh, I can do something about it. So I went to this Congress of North Dakota and asked him to speak up for Palin, and he did. He went on the floor of Congress, and he asked, why is the government holding this man? And, of course, the government had no answer, so they had to release him right away. It was that easy. After 15 years, he walked out of there a free man.
Well, see, those were back in the days when you actually did have to have a charge to legally hold somebody. You now, of course, you don't. In the so-called war on terror, back then to get around that, they had to claim you insane. Today, they don't have to do that anymore. They can just arrest you and disappear you to Guantanamo. You don't have to have any charge against you like they did with Padilla. And you don't have to even be told who your accuser is or what the accusation is. Are you aware of the craziness that's going on with the so-called laws today? It's unbelievable. They can hold you without a trial, without any legal representation.
Well, you do that. Look at the guys at Guantanamo. They had absolutely no evidence against any of those people.
Yeah.
And they said
yeah.
they were enemy combatants. But who are they fighting? Nobody knows to this day.
Yeah, it's all a bunch of legal fiction. And these people, many of them have been tortured. We'll never know, really. I mean, how many have died. Uh-huh. We know some have committed suicide.
Well, as their pound sort of broke the ice, for holding people without giving them a trial. And, of course, if they don't give you a trial, they can't sentence you, and so they can just keep you forever.
Well, yeah, I mean, if they declare you insane, how can they sentence you? You're not competent to stand trial, so they'll just keep you on meds and have you locked up in the padded cell, and therefore you can't be a threat to them. It's like the Dark Ages, guys, all over again. People who opened their mouths were far more dangerous than those who took up arms, because you could expose their whole rotten, fraudulent system, which is fragile as a spider's hair, and it would come crashing down on them so that, you know, they couldn't allow that. No, was it solely the Federal Reserve System that he was exposing? Is that the main thing that caused the outrage against him, you know?
Well, the Federal Reserve Bank was essentially a Rothschild operation. It was financed by Baron Alfred de Rothschild of London. He's the one that put the whole thing into operation.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul...
Warburg?
Paul Warburg was simply a Rothschild agent. Mm-hmm. And he was their employee. He worked for the Rothschild.
Sure.
And he was caricatured in the comic strip Little Orphan Annie. The creator, Little Orphan Annie, he called him Daddy Warbucks, the richest banker in the world. And he featured him for years in the Little Orphan Annie comic strip. And nobody knew, apparently, that this was Paul Warburg.
Warbucks. like it.
Described as the richest banker in the world. And so, of course... Paul Warburg was the only one that fitted that description.
Sure. That's pretty cool. Oh, yeah, I love it when that happens. You know, they still do that. So on occasion in Hollywood, they'll make movies using fictitious names and dates and places, but they're making direct correlations with what's going on in Washington. There are a few honest ones still out there. Now, it was his brothers, wasn't it, Max and Carl, that ran the German Reichsbank.
Well, Max Warburg, Paul's brother, was the chief financial advisor to the Kaiser Wilhelm I. And he also was one of the biggest bankers in Germany. He financed Adolf Hitler, you know. Max Warburg and Max Oppenheimer, the two richest bankers in Germany, totally financed Hitler because Hitler was not liked by the German people, and they wouldn't give him any money. But the two Maxes gave him all he wanted, and they created the Nazi Party.
Sure. And, of course, there were American financiers that were helping Hitler as well. We'll talk more about that, guys, when we get back. Short break. Stick with us. We'll be right back. Okay, guys. Welcome back to Truth Hurts Radio. Your host, Charlie Giuliani. We've got our guest on, Eustace Mullins. Before the break, Eustace, we're talking about American financiers helping as well as German financiers to fund Hitler. You know, we had Harriman. We had Prescott Bush, interestingly.
Well, Jacob Schiff, who was Paul Warburg's partner in the Rothschild Bank, actually financed the Nazi Party and the Fascist Party in Italy, and the everything else was going on. They put up the money and they went into operation.
Yeah. And, you know, even after the war as well, you know, as much as I'm not a big fan of J. Edgar Hoover, he was correct. He brought out, in fact, he wanted to indict Prescott Bush as one of the war criminals, as he was, you know, funding Adolf Hitler.
Well, when the Bolsheviks set sail from New York City to go to Russia to enact the Russian Revolution, John D. Rockefeller stuffed $10,000 in cash into Leon Trotsky's pocket in order to give him money to operate on.
Yeah. Absolutely incredible. People need to realize, you know, what's been going on here for a very long time.
Nobody knew anything about this. In fact, the story about Rockefeller seeing off the Bolsheviks to go to Russia to start the Russian Revolution didn't break into the press for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you look at where the money was coming from for all of that. It was right from Washington. I mean, from Wall Street. Major Wall Street firms were sending money over.
Jacob Schiff financed the Japanese war against the Tsar, which brought around, indirectly brought down the downfall of the entire Russian Empire.
You know, I've never looked into this, but it wouldn't surprise me to discover, how about people like Mao? You know, was Mao also getting funding, do you know?
Well, that was the beginning of Japan as a world power, because they defeated Russia very handily.
Right. Well, I know we had our fingers in China with the, you know, the Chinese Communist Revolution late 1940s. We did have our hand in over there, so I wouldn't be surprised if we were funding their communist dictator as well. You know, this is what Wall Street has favored. They love communism. They love dictatorships, actually. It doesn't matter what form of government it is, what name it calls itself, because that's all it is. It's just a name. You know, we're called a democracy. It's supposed to be a republic, but, you know, who cares about that anymore? Nobody knows what it is anyway. But regardless what we're called or any other country, we're a dictatorship here. Like it or not, folks, this country is run by a dictator. So, yeah, Eustace, with your hindsight here that you've had, you know, you've been around a few years, you've seen a lot of changes in Washington. What do you think about the situation we're in now as compared to, I mean, we've had some ugly people in Washington in the past, but yeah, when we get back, I'd like to get your opinion, what you think now as compared to messes we've been in the past. You know, where do you see us at now? Gonna go to a short break. Stick with us, folks. Be right back. Okay, guys. Welcome back to Truth Hurts Radio. It's your host, Charlie Giuliani. For the break, I was asking Mr. Mullins to relate, how he feels about what's going on with this current administration. We've had some monkeys in the White House before. You know, we could cite Nixon, Johnson. I would even argue that FDR is probably the worst among them until Bush came along. But in any case, you know, we've had some messes, some scandals, major ones. We've had, you know, the Watergate affair and so forth. We had the Iran-Contra scandal of the 80s, the BCCI fraud. But would you say, what would you say, Mr. Mullins, does this one take the cake?
Well, the Federal Reserve Act was passed by Congress in 1913 after Jacob Schiff and the National City Bank had put up money to run Woodrow Wilson for president for the sole purpose of signing the Federal Reserve Act into law. And, of course, as soon as he did that, they started World War One, and Wilson's protege was Franklin D. Roosevelt. So his protege was all set to start World War II. It was the same people, same actors, and everything.
Right. And so it's been the same family names all through the decades that popping up.
And they changed in World War II, the U.S. government changed the name of the War Department to the Defense Department because they determined they were not engaged in wars anymore. They simply defend the United States.
Oh, yeah, it makes for better propaganda.
Oh, yes. It makes, sounds much better.
Yeah, makes it more acceptable to the public. Unbelievable. But in reality, of course, it should be called the Department of Offense because that's all they ever do. You know, we've been engaged.
And the first Secretary of Defense, they murdered him because he wouldn't turn over all of our armed forces operations to the State of Israel. So they pushed him out the window, and he supposedly committed suicide.
Who's that committed suicide?
That was the first Secretary of Defense. He was murdered at Wright.
I don't think I'm familiar with that story. Who was this now?
Oh, I can't think of his name at the moment. It's a very well-known name. And he was a partner of Dylan Reed in New York City. But that name just slips me at the moment.
What era was this? Who was this under?
He was under Roosevelt. He was appointed Secretary of Defense by Roosevelt.
Well, I know the Secretary of War was Stimson. You're not talking about
that. Oh, yeah, that was Henry Stimson. I was during World War II. And he was succeeded by this man. He had an Irish name, and I can't think of it to save my life.
Oh, okay. I'm not familiar with who that is. I didn't think it would be Stimson because Stimson, they loved him.
Oh, no, Stimson's a long
time. He was a yes man. They wouldn't have bumped him off, made it look like a suicide.
Oh, yeah, he was part of the conspiracy.
Oh, sure. In fact, he was a skull and boneser. He was very instrumental in getting the Japanese to attack Pearl Harbor. You know, he suggested, in fact, that they force them into a position where they'll be forced to make the first strike. So he was all for that. They loved him. They only want to murder those that don't play the ball game by their rules and actually want to do something to help the general public. That's not to be tolerated. As long as they, you know, stiff the public, then they're okay. They can stay in power.
Murder is a standard weapon of their repertoire.
Yeah. And, of course, this... I guess we've got to go to a short break, guys. Stick with us. We'll pick up with this as soon as we get back. Back to Truth Hurts Radio. It's your host, Charlie Giuliani. We've got Eustace Mullins on as the guest. I guess somebody had called in Eustace with the name Forrestal. Was that him?
James Forrestal, yes. He was the first Secretary of Defense and was appointed by Roosevelt. And then he began to object to our sending our entire military structure to help Israel. And so they immediately circulated the story that he's losing his mind and that he was suicidal, and they took him to the Bethesda Naval Hospital in Washington and put him in a room on the 25th floor, and in case he wanted to go anywhere, they left the window open for him. So he went out the window.
My, my. You know, that one escaped me. I didn't know that. They knocked him off. Wasn't a ball player, huh?
Oh, yes. And his son, James Forrestal Jr., spent the rest of his life trying to show, to tell people that they had murdered his father. But he never got very far.
So, I mean, you think it was solely over that issue? He wasn't supporting Israel?
Oh, yes. That was the whole crux of the thing, because Israel was fighting a war for independence and needs all the military supplies it could get. And
right.
So Forrestal, as the Secretary of Defense, objected to sending all of our military supplies to Israel.
My, my, my. Well, there you go, guys. Even back then, the influence was pretty overwhelming.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, hey, many politicians worth their weight in gold in this country's history have stated that, you know, since the creation of the State of Israel, that it's, you know, career suicide, or in some cases, literal suicide. If you don't go along with what Israel wants, you wind up dead.
Well, you know, when Fred Thompson announced his candidacy for the presidency, he did it by saying, I will immediately attack Iran, which is what Israel wants to, us to do.
Mm-hmm.
So he
got
himself off to a good start in his campaign for the presidency by pledging to attack Iran immediately. And he said, I'm doing this to help Israel. So he didn't leave anybody in doubts as to what his purpose was.
Unreal. And, you know, they don't want us to be bored or to catch on too quickly to what's going on. So they throw a little variety in. They don't suicide everybody. Some of them, they just have their planes crash conveniently. They like to go back and forth, though, between those two, don't they?
Oh, yes.
Plane crash, suicide. Plane crash, suicide. I, you know, it's just too obvious what's going on. This is just unbelievable.
Well, they're becoming more and more blatant in their program, you know. Attack Iran and attack Saudi Arabia and attack all the Middle Eastern countries that have oil.
Yeah, sure, sure. Conveniently, all these terror networks happen to be located in countries with the bulk of the world's oil supply. You know, just before you came on, I had a caller that brought out that the base where the plane flew, you know, the last week there that had those nukes on it. I don't know if you're aware, but, you know, there's been conflicting reports. Some say that there were six and that they were all accounted for. Other reports say five and they were all accounted for. Obviously, there's something wrong with, you know, there's a discrepancy in the numbers. And those who have been coming out and saying the discrepancy exists because the plane did have six and not all were accounted for, one was missing. And now it turns out six people have died in just the past week now from that base where the plane landed. And, you know, they're saying that this is either accidents or whatever. I don't know if suicide has been thrown in the mix as one of the reasons, but there seems to be a familiar pattern here. You know, it looks to me like maybe they were hoping on having that nuke turn up supposedly in the hands of Iranians, or maybe actually set the thing off and say Iranians had stole it, and you know, to come up with a pretext for the war.
You know, the interesting thing about our attacking Iran is that regardless of how necessary it is to do it, the fact is we don't have any soldiers or any money to attack Iran with.
Yeah, isn't that
and
the truth?
That's why it sounded so strange that Fred Thompson would immediately attack Iran, because I told a friend of mine that Fred Thompson doesn't have any army.
Well, you know, if they did stage some kind of attack and frame Iran, you know, for it, they would, of course, introduce the draft. They've already got several bills before Congress for that very purpose.
Oh, so, they're perfectly willing to have a draft.
Yeah, unfortunately, that would take care of their problem. Yeah. But at the same time, I think it would arouse a lot more people to wake up to what's going on here and resist them. So I don't know how well that would actually go for them.
Well, they should be waking up, because the morning Washington Post, in emphasizing the fact that conditions were improving in Iraq, noted that they'd begun to distribute the Iraq oil revenues. So that shows everything was getting in shape.
Yeah. You know, it's high time the American people do wake up. I mean, you know, how long do they have to be abused and used and, you know, have dirt kicked in their face before they finally realize? I mean, the thief has broken in the house. He's already emptied out all the furniture. He's emptied out the safe. He's driven away with their car, taken their firstborn, kidnapped the daughter and the wife, and the guy's still sleeping in bed. Does he have to drag the guy out of bed? The burglar alarm has gone off. What more does it take? It's unbelievable.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, we got a caller, Dan in Houston. Welcome to the show, Dan.
Yeah, Raj, great to talk to you guys. Fantastic. What I was talking about, you know, how that they've killed people in airplane wrecks. I was in a VA hospital and got to meet Audie Murphy's brother, the Audie Murphy movie star in World War II, a hero. I guess somebody remembers who he is. And he was saying Audie Murphy, he actually was murdered by the official government investigation. All the newspaper reports at the time said accident, plane crash, blah, blah, you know. And then but the investigation showed that the explosion was far in excess of what the fuel tanks could have caused, and there had to be a bomb, murder. And Audie Murphy was murdered. And then, you know, Senator McDowell, the leader of the John Birch Society, was murdered. And then in Flight 800 over shot down by a Russian airplane, he was undoubtedly murdered because that's irrefutably verifiable there. And then I was wondering about
Who was on Flight 800?
But you don't know. United States Senator McDowell.
Oh,
he was at the
Larry
time the president of the John Birch Society.
Yeah.
Oh, he was on
Larry
that plane.
McDonald, he was a dentist, but he was the head of the John Birch Society. And he was really ruffling a lot of feathers. So his plane vanished.
It was shot down by a Russian airplane.
They covered that up.
Operation.
Sure. I didn't know he was on that plane, though. I wouldn't put it past them to take a whole plane down just to get one person. They did that with Wellstone's plane. There's all kinds of evidence that has emerged now that thing was staged, and they took out his whole family, his wife's kids, the pilot. I think there's a couple other people on there, too, friends.
Well, McDowell, Flight 800, it was called Flight 007 for a joke. You know, that was officially not the flight thing, 007 it was called. And flew from Alaska to North Korea, and that was shot down by a Russian airliner. And the pilot even said that the airline was killed. He even said they could see the pilot's face to face. The pilot didn't want to shoot him down, but they ordered him to anyway. And I just had to listen to the news that day, this everyday radio news, and they announced the plane was shot down, but nobody of any significance was on the plane. And then it turns out later the United States Senator was on the plane. And so what I'm calling you forward to say that it is so our traitor thugs, murderers, so well control our everyday lives and news media information that they planned to have everybody convinced nobody important was on it. It was just an accident. The day they did it, they didn't. And they were trying to cover it up. This and it happened. I mean, that's how organized they are. Because there's a U.S. Senator on the plane. They went to extremes to announce that day that nobody of importance was on the plane. It was an accident. Just to cover up that McDowell was on the plane. And then the newspaper covered up that Audie Murphy was murdered. And he was somewhat ticked off at the Jews in Hollywood, how they basically were just running. He was trying to help veterans who World War II were disabled and stuff, you know? And
mm-hmm.
And a couple other points. I just wonder if we were – and John Tower was killed in an airplane. He was somewhat anti-Yankee, I put it blunt. Which means he was basically anti-Catholic, even though he was raised Catholic. He got sick of the crap.
There was Congressman Brown too, or Senator Brown under Clinton. There, he was popped off in another.
Oh, Ron Brown was a very famous case because they put on the plane. Ron Brown said, "I'm not going down alone." So they put on a plane with 65 American business leaders, and the plane went down.
So he
didn't go down alone.
I just wonder I'm just curious, but what about Will Rogers? Will Rogers was definitely anti having the Jews control our way of life, and he was killed in an airplane because there's no way of knowing way back in those days. But you think there's any oddball chance Will Rogers was murdered by the Jews also? Or I should say Zionists, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, the Wiley Post plane with Will Rogers was shot down.
You think he was murdered with an accident?
No, that was part of the Alaska defense program. They wanted to proceed with the rearming of Alaska. We didn't have hardly any military forces in Alaska at that time, and the Wally Post Will Rogers plane was shot down to alert people to the fact that we had to have more military operations in Alaska.
Well, officially it was an accident. Officially it was ruled an accident, not murder. Is that correct?
Well, they always have to shoot down the plane.
Yes, sir. Well, I guess your opinion of Ronald Reagan, he was one time called Red Ron because he was a member of the Communist Party.
Oh, he was known all over Hollywood as Red Ronnie because he was a well-known communist leader. And his wife was, Nancy was a very active communist.
Is that documented anywhere?
I'll tell you what, Dan, hold that thought. We got to go to a quick break. We'll be right back. Back to True Threats Radio. We've got Dan on the line in Texas. Before I go back to him, though, I just wanted to ask you a question, Mr. Mullins. Isn't it frustrating when for years and years, in your case, you know, past four, five decades, six decades, you've been studying this stuff, you've been watching it unfold firsthand, you know about the goings-on behind the scenes, how rigged it is, what a complete scam the whole thing is from the word go. And yet there's still people out there who are, you know, pointing a laughing finger saying, oh, you're such a crazy conspiracy nut. There's no conspiracy. That's all this is one big massive fraudulent conspiracy. It's frustrating, isn't it?
Well, it's not really frustrating because it becomes more interesting as you go along.
Yeah, but I mean, to see that there are still people that are apathetic and totally mindlessly unquestioning, although I must say they're shrinking in number. People have become a lot more aware in recent years that this government is and has been corrupt for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
and they're part of the war machine.
Yeah. They're getting so aggressive now and pushing so blatantly forward with this. And, of course, the way that they're trying to get laws now, hate crime laws, to shut you up so you don't protest Israel's role in Washington when everybody can clearly see by now, got to be brain dead not to see it, that they are, in fact, controlling everything. Even the pages of their own papers, Jerusalem Post and Haaretz, have stated emphatically that Israel isn't interested in peace in the Middle East and that they have been primarily instrumental in pushing Washington into Iraq and now pushing us into Iran. Their own papers attest to this. So, I mean, how can anybody deny this anymore? Anyway, Dan, I guess you had a couple more questions about some mysterious deaths for our guest.
Yeah, oh gosh, yeah. Had at least two questions. First, did you have a website? Did your guest have a website?
Yeah, Eustace, do you have a website?
No, I don't have a website at the present time. I'm just sending my books through the mail.
Yeah, how do people get your books? I know, I guess they're no longer available through, used to be Liberty Lobby, but I guess they're not around anymore, right?
No, they're still lobby. They're still there, but they're not handling my books for several years.
So you want to give your address how people can get your books?
Yes. They can order the books from the Christian home at Sturtstraff, Virginia, zip code 24477.
Is there a street address, a post office box?
No, it's just the Christian home.
That will get it there, just putting Christian home?
Oh, yes.
Okay. How do you spell the town?
The Christian home at Sturtstraff, Virginia.
That town, I'm not...
477.
Yeah, can you spell the town? Do you know how to? I've never heard of that town.
Oh, Stuart Straff is like Jeb Stuart, the Confederate general, And draft players and draft beer.
I got you. Stuart Draft. I got you. Okay. And that's all that's needed, folks. Okay, you can send for information there.
Oh, yeah.
Send you a list, and you can get his books there. Was there something else, Dan?
How do you spell Stuart again? I'm sorry.
Stuart Draft. S-T-U-A-R-T, Draft.
Oh, yeah. Stuart Draft, Virginia.
Got it. Okay. Well, I can ask about the House of Activities Committee. If you get their records, would they show that how he was called Red Ron and his wife was a communist also and all that? I guess I'm asking two questions. What do you have to say with the House of American Tubes Committee, which was, of course, shut down by the Jews? And then where could I find a verification of the Red Ron was called Red Ron? And then what books do you have? What are your books?
Well, that was commonplace. The name Red Ron was commonplace when he started out in politics, but they gradually dropped that off.
And he worked for the Hearst newspaper thing, didn't he? Newspaper reporter?
Yeah, he was helped by Hearst because Hearst was always looking around. Hearst also invented the success of Billy Graham as a great missionary. Hearst would get by on anybody who was doing what he wanted him to do.
And Hearst was a big shot Catholic, right?
Yeah, he had a tremendous amount of influence. He could make or break anybody.
And but he was a Catholic. Was he not a Catholic?
I don't know whether he's a Catholic or not. I think Hearst was originally a Jewish name, H-I-R-S-C-H.
Hmm. Billy Graham definitely had some interesting beginnings, huh?
Oh, he really did. He was a total nobody. And all of a sudden, Hearst made him a worldwide phenomenon.
Well, that's like Jimmy Carter. You know, Jimmy Carter, overnight, boom, he's a household name. He befriended the right people.
Oh, yes, he became advisor to presidents. He was welcome at the White House with Richard Nixon, and every president had to have Billy Graham at his side.
I'd like to mention it. I've had some preachers in my family, Protestant preachers, Nazarene, Methodist, and they've remarked how Billy Graham, actually, they think was about the biggest crook you ever found in the earth. All the enormous amounts of money he took in, but he never spent a penny on any charity. No one even knows where his money went. He spent nothing for the Christian movement.
Yeah, some people think that he became corrupt as the years went on, but if he had that kind of beginning, he had to be corrupt from the start. I'm going to go to another break. I guess, Dan, did you want to hang on? Or?
Yeah, if you don't mind, yeah.
Okay, sure. Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Hey guys, welcome back to True Threats Radio. Your host, Charlie Giuliani. We'll go back to Dave in 1 minute in Texas. I guess he had another question or two, but I just wanted to ask our guest, Eustace Mullins, what do you think of Jimmy Carter? I find him to be quite the enigma, because here was someone who obviously early on befriended the establishment, you know, specifically David Rockefeller, also obviously a close friend of Zbigniew Brzezinski, a man of a most dubious reputation, yet here he is now speaking out so loudly against the government of Israel, calling it apartheid, what they're doing to the Palestinians. He's absolutely right. And he's getting a lot of flack in the media for it. You know, is this part of their shill game? Or is the man turned over a new leaf? What do you think of that?
I don't think anybody's turned around. Who were you asking about?
Jimmy Carter.
Oh, Jimmy Carter. Oh, Jimmy Carter is two-faced as they come.
It's very strange.
He's called for some of the strangest dictatorships of a like Billy Graham.
Yeah. I mean, it's very bizarre. I mean, is he against Israel or is he for Israel? Is he just playing the part of one who's opposed to Israel? Because he's been very outspoken.
Jimmy Carter's called in whenever they want to bolster any particular program, and Jimmy Carter doesn't know what it is, but he'll be for it anyway, as long as they can get his name in the paper and sell some more books.
I guess so. Oh, it's just crazy. All right, I guess we have another. Dan, are you still there in Texas? We got another caller here.
Yes, sir. Please let me ask you about, is the John Birch Society today corrupt, you think? I mean, I know it's been infiltrated because we've had a big split. The John Birch Society, which I love the members of, and I go to meetings with my wife, and we enjoy making great friends. But we have no doubt that they actually had an official split just recently, fighting over the money, of course, and then part of their property. But they also had a website until just recently where members could have a chat room and talk to each other. They shut down that chat box. They don't want us talking to each other. So I mean, that shows how they've been taken over by the enemy, which, of course, was just John Jewel Welch who started this. But I guess the John Birch Society was started by the enemies of what it stands for. Is that, was it started by an honest guy or a bad guy? Was John Welch a crook or not?
Oh, well, the John Birch Society was started to fill a need. It was a very pressing need because all the foundations in the United States had been exposed as openly communist front organizations. The Ford Foundation, the Rockefeller Foundation, they were all 100% communist. So the John Birch Society was invented to say this is going to be an anti-communist foundation. And so Nelson Rockefeller, whose father was a leading communist in the United States, Nelson Rockefeller came out with this new John Birch Society, which would be anti-communist. And, of course, it was very fake from the beginning. I knew a number of people who were present at the formation of the John Birch Society in New York City. And the Rockefellers bought the Welch Candy Company so that Robert Welch could be devoted all his time to being head of the John Birch Society. And that was just a shadow operation.
Yeah, this is the game they play. They play both sides.
Oh, yes, they have to control all sides.
Yeah, and so they don't care. They really don't care, guys.
They can be a very dedicated communist or a very dedicated anti-communist, whatever the program calls for.
I got to talk to a communist once from Romania at a gun show, and I was at a John Birch Society booth. And he was just a brazen country. He told me that what the John Birch Society is the communist frontier of the world is in two different methods. The method in Russia was with murder and war, but the method in the United States is peaceful at first because get John Birch Society to find out who they have to get rid of, and when they're ready, they'll just knock us off. The John Birch Society members who have any clout, you know, and they get rid of us. This murderous. I'm not having any clout on me, but you know, big like Senator McDowell, just get rid of them and prevent the movement from growing with dedicated citizens having any power in the country.
The John Birch Society is like any other. You're going to have your infiltrators anyway. Anytime you stand up against these scoundrels, they're going to try to infiltrate you. If you get any kind of organization going, but that doesn't mean that everything they produce is junk. You know, I first woke up to the dangers of the UN through their New American publication. You know, they got a lot of good stuff on there that exposes it. So in spite of...
Their summer camps are really weird. So there's some very strange people there that are messing with the kids. But
I wouldn't get involved with that. But, you know, I mean, just as far as their books they produce, they've got some good stuff, videos. Anyway, Dan, was there anything else? Because I wanted to get to Bob in D.C.
Well, real quick, I think you're wrong about the summer camps for kids. The kids love them. My son thought it was better than Bible Vacation School or better than the YMCA or Boy Scouts. Overall, the kids love their summer camps, even though they seem to have one or two strange guys in them sometimes.
Well, you're going to find those everywhere, unfortunately.
Yeah, okay.
All right, Dan, thanks for your call. We're going to go to Bob in D.C. You there, Bob?
Yes, hello, Charlie and Eustace. How are you? Hello?
You might not have heard you.
Hello, Eustace. Hello? Can you hear me? Hello?
Yeah, Mr. Mullins, he was asking how you're doing. Did you have a question for him?
Well, I've got two or three things. Number one, I have a blog spot that Eustace knows about that is just informational that has some of his books on it, and I have to update the address. And I want to, I'm going to put it as Eustace Mullins, then Stewart's Draft Christian Home.
Yeah, that's right.
And then there's also a street address, confirm it please, 104 Patton Farm Road, that's P-A-T-T-O-N.
Yeah, that'll reach me too.
Okay, now do you or do you not want me to put the room number in?
The room number is 101.
Okay, so I will put that in. And that's Stewart's Draft, 24477. Very good. One other thing, Charlie and Eustace. People should know that Eustace does not have a typewriter now, and his computer is not operating in a manner that he can use it. Now, he uses an IBM Selectric. So anyone out there that has an IBM Selectric, he could really use one. And the ones that he's got are not operable at this point in time. Is that correct, Eustace? That's the last time we talked.
Eustace, you're having trouble with your computer system? You need a new computer?
Yeah, I do have trouble with it. But it's not IBM Selectric. It's a Dell.
Right. But if someone could find an IBM Selectric typewriter for you, would you use that?
Oh, yes, indeed.
Yeah, because I know that's what you're accustomed to.
I had two IBM Selectrics. They were wonderful.
Yes, that's
right. In fact,
right.
I talked to you last week, Mr. Mullins. You mentioned you're working on another book, and I don't remember what the subject matter was now. It sounded interesting.
I'm doing my autobiography, which gives the inside story of Joe McCarthy and
That's right. It was about him. Yeah, because I remember we were talking about him.
Yeah, I'm very anxious to get that book out. A lot of people are waiting for it.
Autobiography on Joseph McCarthy. So, guys, you know, anybody listening out there, you want a worthy cause to help support, this is it right here. Mr. Mullins has written some great books. By the way, a last caller wanted a list of your books. I wanted to mention, I don't know if you've written any more than your trilogy there. I know you're most famously known for that.
I got 15 books in print.
Oh, 15? No kidding. Wow. The only three I know of, of course, is Murder by Injection, very good, History of the Medical Mafia.
Oh, yeah.
The World Order, it's about the New World Order. And then, of course, The Secrets of the Federal Reserve. What are some of the other ones you've written?
Oh, I have a textbook on American law, which is called The Rape of Justice. And that's been done a lot of good work.
Charlie?
Wow. Yeah.
Charlie, it's just an informational blog. There's no posting or anything. But it's eustacemullins.blogspot.com. And I'm updating the address. I had your nephew's name on there before, Eustace, but I will direct it directly to you at Stewart's Draft Christian Home now.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Well, my nephew's here in Stewart's Draft, too.
Yes, I know.
So anybody wants this information, you can just go to eustacemullinsblogspot.com and you can get the address to get the books. Great. And Eustace is spelled E-U-S-T-A-C-E, Eustace.
Eustace Mullins without any spaces, .blogspot. Right, that's it.
Right.
Okay,
and
Charlie.
Mullins is thanks for the call. Appreciate
Thank
it.
Thank you, and be good, Eustace. Take care.
And Mullins, guys, is spelled M-U-L-L-I-N-S, eustacemullinsblogspot.com. And the correct address will be there, and you can go and get his books. I highly recommend them. Very good stuff. I've got a lot of important info out of him over the years. Mr. Mullins, can you think of some of the other books? And are they all available?
They're all currently in print, but some of them are in sort of short supply.
So what are some of the other ones you've written? I had no idea that I had that many available.
Well, first I had the Federal Reserve book. Then I have The Curse of Canaan now also. The Curse of Canaan is a study of demonology and history.
Really?
Yeah.
So you talk about exorcisms and
complete history of the Freemasons and Arab and Babylon.
So you make that connection between Freemasonry and demonism.
Oh, yes. It's all in the Bible and all in religious books.
Wow. I'd be very interested in reading that.
That's a very fascinating book. That was advertised on Pastor Peter's radio program for a long time, and it just completely sold out. I got a few copies left now.
Wow. That's really interesting. You know, somebody wanted me to ask you this. I don't know if we want to go too far down this road. You know, I don't want to get into maybe some past bitterness that you've had, but I had a Constance Cumby on a few weeks ago, which, you know, I enjoyed having her. She's very good. She was a good guest, and I've read her material. It's great stuff. But I guess you and her have had a pretty nasty falling out, I hear.
Who is that?
Constance Cumby. Somebody wanted me to ask you about her and, you know, what you your opinion was and what happened between you and her. And is that something you'd rather not go into? Or?
Oh, no. So I had a falling out with Elizabeth Dilling, and Elizabeth attacked me when I went to Chicago. But we never really had a falling out.
Oh, okay. It's not quite as bad. But anyway, so your other works, are they religious in nature as well, or political, or?
Oh, they're all political. They all stand
by the
original work on the Federal Reserve, because the Federal Reserve opened up a whole can of worms, because they're all interconnected.
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole picture here, this push for global domination, your world order, new world order, hinges on that. I mean, that's what's paying the bills. They've been exploiting us, parasiting off of us through the Federal Reserve and its accompanying income tax system to pay for this.
The House of Rothschild in 1838 invented the Pandora's box of modern history. They invented communism, fascism, Nazism, and Zionism.
Sure.
So all of the plagues of modern men come right out of Frankfurt, Germany, from the House of Rothschild.
That's why I laugh, you know, when people get into arguments about properly defining what is communism, what is socialism, and it doesn't matter. They're all created by the same people for the same purpose. They all lead to dictatorship. They're just titles. They're just names. They don't mean a thing. You know, follow the money. Who's pulling the strings?
Yeah, follow the money, because you can't have politics without money. You have to pay the people to work for you.
Yeah. I'm looking here. I'm logged into a chat forum called Pal Talk, and I'm looking at a question. Somebody wants me to ask you if a corrective selective 3 would work. Do you know what they're talking about?
What was that question?
Someone wants me to ask you if a corrective selective 3 would work.
Well, I don't think so, because elections function purely on money. Like Hillary Clinton has raised $50 million to declare war on Iran.
Yeah.
So, none of these people can do anything without money.
Right. In fact, she's every bit as much a neocon, really, as Bush is. I mean, her main supporter is Rupert Murdoch. You don't get more neocon than that.
Oh, Rupert Murdoch really calls the shots, because he controls the news of the world right now. In fact, his stool pigeon, Bill O'Reilly, is supposed to be a great right-winger. In fact, he's just an apologist for the state of Israel.
Yeah. Well, you know, you just don't get into politics today, and you certainly don't stay in politics today, unless you're playing ball with that little cabal there. I mean, they do, in fact, have the... Have you ever written anything on them specifically, like, you know, IPAC or the Israeli influence in Washington?
I beg pardon?
Have you written any books on that subject specifically, you know, Zionism and their influence in Washington?
Zionism?
Yeah. Do you have any books on that subject?
Oh, no, I don't have any. I have a book I wrote years ago called The New History of the Jews, which deals with the Christian presence.
And is that still available, or is that one out
of print? No, that's out of print right now.
Oh, okay. It's astonishing, isn't it, the degree to which mainstream Christianity has fallen for this ploy, this Zionist thing, supporting them even to the extent where they're, you know, mass murdering Palestinians, and there seems to be no aversion to that. It's crazy, isn't it, the way that... you know, your Pat Robertsons, of course, Pat Robertson is a little scoundrel anyways, but so many well-meaning Christians have been led through these hucksters to lend support to this secular political state of Israel as though somehow God is behind it.
Well, it's the God of money. Pat Robertson, I went to college with Pat Robertson.
And, no.
Pat Robertson's father was the chairman
Congressman.
The Senate Banking and Currency Committee. He was in touch with all the Wall Street bankers.
Sure, sure. Yeah, he was a big name in Congress. Now, but you actually went to... So were you on a first-name basis with him? Did you know him that well?
Oh, with Pat? Yeah, I was a college classmate of his.
No kidding. Hey, I wanted to hear some more about that. We got to go
He's
to a quick break.
He's never had all his television program. But he actually wrote his own version of my book, The World Order...
Yeah, I know, yeah. We'll talk about that. We got to go to a quick break. Hold on to that thought. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back on Truth Hurts Radio. It's your host, Charlie Giuliani. We've got a few more minutes with our guest, Eustace Mullins. Yeah, before the break, we're talking about good old Pat Robertson and his book. Now, you want to talk about mixed messages here. We mentioned that with Jimmy Carter. Two-faced, you know, playing both sides of the coin here. We can say the same with Pat Robertson.
Because Pat Robertson boasted he gets in $5 million a week in contributions.
Wow.
And that is real money.
$5 million a week.
$5 million a week. That's what his income is. He has an empire in Virginia Beach.
In
fact,
CBN.
He's back as the only employee in town.
$5 million. Well, you know that's what Jesus used to collect, right? He had a big network of followers, and he used to rake in the bucks. He drove around in a gold-plated horse and buggy there, and it's unbelievable.
Some of his cohorts had they put a diamond studded collar on their dog, you know.
Yeah. You know, but here's a guy who wrote what I used to think was a really good book. Well, it actually is a good book, but it doesn't mean he's a good person. But, you know, I, in my more gullible years, was a fan of Pat Robertson because he wrote that New World Order book, which exposed the whole thing, talked about Daddy Bush, which now, of course, I know that he was still is a very close friend of Daddy Bush. Yet in his book, he's exposing Daddy Bush as one of the big players in the New World Order, which he is.
Oh, yes.
But, you know, what's that?
Oh, that's absolutely true.
Yeah. I mean, he actually grew up next door, on the same street anyway, as Daddy Bush. They were childhood friends, you know, from way back. So for him to be exposing... George Bush's role in the New World Order, and now finding out he himself is playing a major role in it. His book is a whole lot of wind, isn't it? It's still a good book.
You're dealing with a comparatively small number of people.
Yeah, it's still a good book. You know, it does expose the whole fiasco, the whole conspiracy. It talks about the Rockefellers, talks about the central banking system, the Federal Reserve, the income tax on it. Well, actually, not so much the income tax, but yet all the while, once again, as is so true to form for these globalist supporters, you know, he's actually part of it. It's amazing. They act like they're opposed to the very thing that, and you know, in doing that, it's fooled a lot of people because people rally behind him and thinking that in supporting him, they're going to be fighting against this evil system, not realizing he's pulling them aboard. So, you know, folks, if you've been a backer, a supporter of Pat Robertson, I got some sad news for you. You're on the wrong side. And, of course, you can say the same thing about Billy Graham and a whole lot of other televangelists. I'm sure you're aware, Mr. Mullins, a lot of these televangelists actually are 33rd degree Masons. Isn't that astonishing, you know, that you have these Christian leaders that not only belong to Freemasonry, but are high-ranking members. What's his name, the Crystal Cathedral there? Schuller, Robert Schuller, big-time Mason.
Well, they find willing agents to do their work for them.
Yeah, yeah. It's just so unfortunate that so many otherwise, you know, sincere and well-meaning Christians are being led down the wrong path. Unfortunately, that's all the time we got on the show for today. I want to thank you for coming on, Mr. Mullins. It's been a very interesting interview, and I hope people are going to go to the website there and get the information and order your books.
Oh, very good.
EustaceMullinsBlogspot.com, guys. Thanks again. We'll catch you tomorrow, folks. Have a good day.